I am super excited to continue our study this morning. Shannon and I had a wonderful time away, being refreshed, hiking, seeing snow. One of us was happy about that. But I'm also very, very grateful to my very capable father-in-law for preaching while I was away. And again, I want to tell you that you don't want to miss the Raging Battle Workshop on July 3rd, so please plan on attending that. But today, we get back into our series, The Depths of Grace. And here is the big idea of this series. We need to go deeper in grace than just our salvation. Grace is more than just a way to be justified. It is a way to be sanctified. Grace doesn't just get us into Jesus, but deep grace helps us get more of Jesus into us. And that is why grace must be deep. Something I want you all to know about me. When I was young, I was on the path to become a Major League Baseball player. Two things got in my way. Number one was a call that I felt to preach, and number two was that I could not even make the high school baseball team. Number one that made me decide not to go down that path. But listen, I love to play baseball. I still do. I think it is my absolute favorite sport. I think baseball is a powerful metaphor. Because in baseball, you have strikes, you get called out, and if you're going to succeed in baseball, you have to learn to stay focused on the goal and not when a strike is called. And the same thing in life. If you have strikes against you, sometimes there's unsportsmanlike conduct against you. So the important thing is not to avoid every strike, because you can't do that. The important thing is to not let a strike become your cell. What is the right way to respond when someone does you wrong? A man named Dave sent this story into Reader's Digest. He lives in Boulder, Colorado. He got pulled over a couple years back during the winter for driving too fast. He insisted he wasn't going over the speed limit, but the police officer said, well, due to the inclement weather, your speed is too dangerous. So he gave him a ticket. And Dave protested, and he said, officer, I can't believe this. I didn't go over the speed limit, and you're giving me a speeding ticket. And the officer just said, kind of blithely, well, if you don't like it, you can just go to court. Well, 2 months later, it's spring, and it's the start of softball season. And Dave is an umpire for the local Parks and Rec in softball. The first batter was that police officer. And the police officer recognized Dave, and he said, well, hey, how'd that ticket thing work out? And Dave said, well, let me put it this way. Better swing at everything. And the reason that we like stories like that is because we don't admit it, but we like vengeance. We like payback. Our favorite movies are not about forgiveness. They're about the bad guys getting exactly what they deserve. Even if you have to destroy a whole city in the process, you make sure those bad guys get their comeuppance. After all, doesn't the Bible say something about an eye for an eye? But Jesus says, if you live eye for an eye, pretty soon the whole world will be blind. Just because something feels good doesn't mean that it does good. And when you respond with anger and resentment and payback, what you reflect is that you only understand a very shallow grace in your life, because grace is meant to go deeper than your wound. You will have strikes called. You will get fouled. Even if you're a Christian, especially if you are a Christian, Jesus told us that you are going to be wounded. Not just by people that don't believe. You are going to be wounded by other followers of Jesus. That's why when he was teaching his disciples how to pray in this new kingdom that he is creating, he says, be sure you say something like this, and God, you forgive me my debts as I also forgive my debtors. Because somebody owes you, right? Big time. Somebody owes you an explanation. Somebody owes you an apology. Somebody owes you some respect. Somebody owes you the truth. Somebody owes you the faithfulness they pledged that they would give to you. Somebody owes you. The church will always be the fellowship of the fouled. And while we rarely get to choose our wounds, we always get to choose how we will respond to being wounded. We basically have two choices. Josiah Haney very competently read this verse for us at the beginning of our worship service. See to it that no one misses the grace of God, and that no bitter root grows up to cause trouble and defile many. So when you can choose to get bitter, and that will poison you, and it will hurt people around you. Or you can choose to go deeper into the grace of God. And what the Hebrew writer is saying, write this down, grace is better than bitter. Back in December of 2009, a game was released on cell phones, first for the iPhone because it is a superior phone, and then later for all phones. The game was called Angry Birds. Have any of you here ever played Angry Birds? And don't lie, you're in church. Okay. The idea behind the game is this. There are some birds who are very angry. We don't know why, but they are. And they are angry at some pigs who live in structures, and those pigs need to be punished. So with the subtle flick of your finger, the birds are launched into these structures which collapse on top of the pigs, and this is considered victory. So the question, what happens to the birds? Well, they blow up. Next question, why do I want to be an angry bird? If I am destroying myself in order to win, did I really win? You never hold on to a wrong and have life turn out right. That's because your wound became your cell. You may have heard the story of the two monks that were walking in the countryside. They came across a distraught older woman who cannot get across the river. So the first monk says, well, we will carry you across. And they lock arms and they make a seat with their arms. They lift her up and they carry her across the river, keeping her dry. And then she goes happily on her way. But a little ways down the road, the second monk began to complain. My clothes are wet. I'm soaking. A little farther down the road, my feet are muddy. I hate this. Farther down the road, he continued, my back is starting to stiffen up. I can't continue walking like this after carrying that old woman. The first monk says, do you know why I haven't been complaining? Because I put the woman down 3 miles ago, and you're still carrying her. So you have a choice when you get fouled, and you will get fouled. Will you choose to keep the bitterness, or will you go deep with the grace of God? Grace is better than bitter because grace erases false labels. And this is very important because bitter people are very quick to justify how they feel, and they are eager to recount how they got foul to anyone who will listen. And the problem, and I need you to hear this very carefully, when we refuse to release and we continue to rehearse, we begin to resemble the thing that we hate. We all know people that have let their wound become their identity. You are the person that got abandoned. You're the child who was mistreated. You're the friend who was stabbed in the back. You're the mate who got left. You're the parent who was disrespected. And long after the foul, you are still in a cell because your wound has become your label. And here's the thing. You cannot be free as long as you have a false identity. Some of you recall the name J.C. Dugard. As an 11-year-old girl in 1991, she was kidnapped by a sex offender. And for 18 years, she basically lived as his slave. And you can imagine the unspeakable indignities that she experienced. And then, as a 29-year-old woman, she was rescued. But just because she was rescued does not mean that she was free. We cannot begin to imagine all of the horrible memories that she had to learn to fight through. So 7 years later, she published this book entitled Freedom. And I'll sum up this book with one incredibly powerful line. She wrote these words, "I am so much more than what happened to me." You don't want to be that person that people see you coming and they immediately think of what happened to you. Because you see, when grace goes deep, we find our identity in what Jesus has done for us, not what somebody else did to us. Colossians 3, the first part of verse 12, Paul writes, God has chosen you and made you his holy people. He loves you. And that is who you are. At your most basic core level, you are the beloved. You are the chosen. You are the treasured child of God. That's who you are. Now, when you know who you are, what do you do? Well, look how it continues. Paul continues, so always do these things. Show mercy to others. Be kind, humble, gentle, and patient. Get along with each other. Forgive each other. If someone does wrong to you, forgive that person because the Lord forgave you. You see, grace doesn't change your past. Grace keeps you from being chained to your past. Because grace that is deep will not let your wound become your label. And even more amazing, deep grace won't even let you label the person that fouled you. You're familiar with the actor Mel Gibson. He produced and directed the movie about Jesus, The Passion of the Christ. And some protested that a man with a history of moral problems like him has no business talking about Jesus. You should also be familiar with a man named Robert Downey Jr. He had his own issues with substance abuse and addiction. He spent a lot of time in rehab centers and even in jail. And he kind of became a pariah in the Hollywood community. But he had an amazing comeback. And a couple years ago, there was this black tie affair, and he was given a Lifetime Achievement Award by his peers in the film industry. And to their surprise, he asked Mel Gibson to join him on the stage. Listen to what he said. "When I could not get sober, Mel Gibson told me to not give up hope, and he encouraged me to find my faith. I couldn't get hired, so he cast me in the lead of a movie that was actually developed for him. And most importantly, he said, if I accepted responsibility for my wrongdoing and embraced that part of my soul that was ugly, that I would become a man. I did it, and it worked. And all Mel asked in return was that someday I help the next guy in some small way. And it's reasonable to assume that he couldn't have imagined that the next guy would be him, or that someday would be this night. So on this special occasion, I would ask that you join me in forgiving my friend Mel Gibson his trespasses and offer him the same kind of clean slate that you have given to me. That is the powerful thing about grace. It doesn't let you label people. It erases those false labels, and instead it embraces true forgiveness. In fact, I would contend that the clearest signal that you only understand shallow grace, the clearest sign that you are actually resistant to deep grace, is your insistence that you be paid back. Because if your experience with grace is not deep enough that you are willing to give it freely, then you still don't get it. So Peter came to Jesus one time and said, oh, okay, this new kingdom thing that you keep talking about, it sounds great, but people still do a lot of bad things. So how many times do I have to forgive someone that just keeps messing up? 7 times? Jesus said, 70 times 7. Peter's eyes get real big. So Jesus said, I'm going to tell you a story. There's a master, and he's going to settle accounts because a lot of people owe him. And so he calls in a guy who owes him, and Jesus gives this absurd number, 10,000 bags of gold. Jesus knew that he was being preposterous. It's like me saying that you owe me $1 gazillion. It's a number that's so ridiculous. You can live 100 more years, and you could never begin to pay it back. So this guy comes before the master, and look at what he says in his story. The servant fell on his knees before him. Be patient with me, he begged, and I will pay back everything. The servant's master took pity on him, canceled the debt, and let him go. He didn't just forgive the debt. He forgave the arrogance of this fool that even thought he could try to pay it back. You see, the very first thing that Jesus is teaching about life in the kingdom is that you can't ever forget how deep your own need for grace actually is. And if you're irritated about what someone owes you, then you haven't meditated long enough on how much you owe God. I heard a pastor share about one time when he was at seminary, and different students were sharing about a day that changed their life. And this one girl told about her experience when she was in high school. She was in the inner city in a very tall building in her school downtown with no air conditioning. So they had to keep the windows open so they could have cool air that would circulate through the room. But that meant all of the noise from the street would come into the classroom while the teacher was trying to teach. And it would particularly annoy the teacher when an ambulance would go by with all the noise and the sirens. And he would always complain about that. And then she said, one Monday morning he came in and he apologized. And he went on to explain that if an ambulance that past weekend had not arrived in time, that he would have lost his wife and their brand new baby. So he apologized to the class with these words: I am so sorry that I got so annoyed by the noise that I wasn't thinking about the lives. And the principle is profound. That what is so frustrating you about somebody else is perhaps revealing your lack of understanding of how much you need the very same thing they do. And if you forget your own debt, you will behave disgracefully. So look what happens as Jesus tells this story. But when the servant found out, he found one of his fellow servants who owed him 100 denarii. And he grabbed him and he began to choke him. And he said, pay back what you owe me. His fellow servant fell on his knees and begged him, be patient with me and I will pay you back. But he refused. Instead, he went off and had the man thrown into prison until he could pay back the debt. Now, 100 denarii is not any small thing. I don't want to make light of that. A month's worth of wages. I'm not saying it's small, but compared to what he had been forgiven. And please don't hear Jesus saying you need to forgive so that you will get forgiven. That would be works righteousness. What Jesus is saying is that you need to forgive because you have been forgiven. The God who expects no past from you does expect a certain kind of future. How can you receive a gift so big and think that you are entitled to hoard it like a miser of the very thing you needed so much and received so generously? So the word of the servant's disgrace got back to the master. By the way, it always does. Look at verse 32. Then the master called the servant in. "You wicked servant," he said. "I canceled all that debt of yours because you begged me to. Shouldn't you have had mercy on your fellow servant just as I had you?" You see, the stunning thing in this story is that the master wasn't mad that the servant got in debt. He was mad that the servant didn't treat the debt of others like his debt had been treated. You see, the parable emphasizes the dynamic importance of remembering. Every single week, we take a moment in our service and we remember something. It is the most important thing that we have to remember. Jesus died for me, a debtor. Jesus said, do this in remembrance of him. Well, how often should we do it? He really didn't say, but a lot of the early Christians did it every single day because they knew it is imperative. It is the foundation of our faith. It is the source of our ethic. It is the most important thing to not forget how much grace we actually needed and how much grace we actually received. And God expects a change of heart from people that have received a completely change of status. Because nothing that has happened to you should go deeper than what Jesus did for you. And listen, I'm not saying forgiveness is easy. Jesus did not say that. What I am saying is, forgiveness is essential. And nowhere is forgiveness more difficult and more of a struggle than the forgiveness that you need to extend to yourself at times. And not remembering how much God's grace can truly cover in your life. I want you to watch and listen to a very powerful story and see this illustrated.
So I actually found out I was pregnant pretty soon after I turned 18. I was a freshman in college, and it kind of went a little wild when I was in college, not because of a bad home life, but because of a great home life. And I had been so well cared for that when I had some freedom, I didn't know how to handle it. And I found out I was pregnant, and I was terrified. I didn't want to let anybody down. I knew I was in college for a reason. It was preordained for me to be there, according to my dad, and that I was going to be a college graduate, and I didn't know how I could possibly do that with a child. I made the very quick snap decision to have an abortion. I would lay there when I was still pregnant, before I had the abortion, in my bed in college, and I would put my hand on my belly, and I just had this sense of peace, you know? And I didn't really get it then, and I didn't realize how much I was doing it until the day, that night of the abortion, when I went back to my dorm room, and I automatically have it, put my hand on my belly, and there was nothing. I didn't consciously deal with it for about 25, 30 years. I think looking back, 2020 is, you know, hindsight, looking back, I had taken a life, and I couldn't value my own life by having done that, even though I wasn't rationalizing that in my head. So I became very reckless. I started taking a lot of dangerous risks. I was very promiscuous. I started drinking more than enough. I was doing other drugs. Luckily, God was looking out for me and never let me really embrace those drugs. And as my friends grew up and didn't have this, you know, they started getting pregnant. They were married and having babies, and I couldn't go. I just absolutely could not step into a baby shower. It was just very uncomfortable. I felt itchy. I felt itchy in my skin when I would go to one. I would make excuses and I would leave. And after a while, I absolutely would just not go. I would not go. So I went through a divorce, and Tim came into my life and kind of gave me direction. And he really wanted to get his kids, because he was also through a divorce, involved in a church. And so it was a way for us to build a family around something. And the more I listened, because I thought, I'll just go. I'll just sit there. I'll be supportive, rah, rah, but I don't have to actually believe. It wasn't a bam, I believe. Mine was a very slow acting. I mean, it was minuscule baby steps for me, really coming to Christ. And I had my baptism, but didn't actually confront my abortion until 2 years later. So my husband started working with a pro-life ministry, and I found myself not wanting to talk to him, because it was all abortion this. And I had spent, you know, at that point, 20 years avoiding the A word at all costs. I just wouldn't deal with it. I didn't want to hear about it. He said, you need to deal with this. You know, if this hurts you so much, why haven't you dealt with this? There are organizations out there. I didn't know there were organizations out there that dealt with post-abortive women. I remember getting a flyer, Tim, my husband, bringing home a flyer, and me reading about this. And I was like, yep. And I'm like, wow, I actually have so many of these symptoms or these manifestations. Maybe I do need to do something about this. Maybe I do need to deal and not just be like, you know what? That's in my past. I'm now a believer in Christ. He has forgiven my sins. And that is all true, 100% true. But if I haven't been able to do that, I came to the really hard truth that I was hobbling my own walk with Christ by not dealing with it. That's when Restored by Grace fell into my lap. I met with the woman who runs it. Her name is Laura. And we'd met at a coffee shop. And it was Halloween. And I remember leaving that meeting going, it's so ironic that there are all these kids out in their masks, and I'm finally ready to take mine off. God has helped me put peace to it, but the wound will never be gone. I mean, it just won't. It will always scar. That scar will be there. And if you've ever had a pretty serious scar, there are days when it itches. There are days where it will trigger you. But God will put in place for you ways to manage and deal with it in a healthy way. Put people in your life that you can talk to and deal with it in a healthy way. So it's such a relief, but it's such a sadness. But it's a sadness that I adore. It's a sadness that I can honor my child instead of ignoring him.
Today's kind of a double whammy. Because some of you are sitting in this room, you're in church, you've been singing praises to God, and you have not forgiven somebody that hurt you. And I'm asking you, in the name of Jesus Christ, to let that debt be canceled. Some of you, like Jazz, you haven't been able to forgive yourself. Now Jazz has. Jazz has embraced God's grace over her life, and she has swam deep in the waters of God's grace. But I want the same for you. I've asked Jazz to go into the back with me after service is over, and There's going to be a table. There's a table in the back, the information table. I have pamphlets on there from Laura Limix, who she talked about from the ministry. It's called Restored by Grace. And it's a powerful ministry. The fact is, in a room this size with a group of people like this, statistics say that there are more than one who have had the same kind of experience as Jazz. It's just a reality. But maybe you have buried it really, really deep. And you don't think about it. You need to understand that God's grace goes deeper. You are loved. You are important. And you are God's treasured child. Would you stand up? I want to pray over you this morning.